Chapter 37. Walter's breath was so completely taken away by his astonishment that he could hardly find enough for the repetition of the words West Indies. Apostrophe, somebody must go, apostrophe, said Mr. Dombey, and you are young and healthy, and your uncle's circumstances are not good. Tell your uncle that you are appointed. You will not go yet. There will be an interval of a month or two, perhaps. Apostrophe, shall I remain there, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Walter. Will you remain there, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Mr. Dombey, turning a little more round towards him. What do you mean? What does he mean, Carker? Apostrophe, live there, sir, apostrophe, faltered Walter. Certainly, apostrophe, returned Mr. Dombey. Walter bowed. That's all, apostrophe, said Mr. Dombey, resuming his letters. You will explain to him in good time about the usual outfit and so forth. Carker, of course. He needn't wait, Carker. Apostrophe, you needn't wait, Gay, apostrophe, observed Mr. Carker. Bear to the gums. Unless, apostrophe, said Mr. Dombey, stopping in his reading without looking off the letter, and seeming to listen. Unless he has anything to say. Apostrophe, no, sir, apostrophe, returned Walter, agitated and confused, and almost stunned, as an infinite variety of pictures presented themselves to his mind, among which Captain Cuttle, in his glazed hat, transfixed with astonishment at Mrs. McStinger's, and his uncle bemoaning his loss in the little back parlor, held prominent places. I hardly know why I am much obliged, sir. Apostrophe, he needn't wait, Carker, apostrophe, said Mr. Dombey. And as Mr. Carker again echoed the words, and also collected his papers, as if he were going away too, Walter felt that his lingering any longer would be an unpardonable intrusion, especially as he had nothing to say, and therefore walked out quite confounded. Going along the passage, with the mingled consciousness and helplessness of a dream, he heard Mr. Dombey's door shut again, as Mr. Carker came out. And immediately afterwards that gentleman called to him. Bring your friend Mr. Carker the Junior to my room, sir, if you please. Apostrophe, Walter went to the outer office, and apprised Mr. Carker the Junior of his errand, who accordingly came out from behind a partition, where he sat alone in one corner, and returned with him to the room of Mr. Carker the manager. That gentleman was standing with his back to the fire, and his hands under his coattails, looking over his white cravat, as unpromisingly as Mr. Dombey himself could have looked. He received them without any change in his attitude, or softening of his harsh and black expression, merely signing to Walter to close the door. John Carker, apostrophe, said the manager, when this was done, turning suddenly upon his brother, with his two rows of teeth bristling, as if he would have bitten him, what is the league between you, and this young man, in virtue of which I am haunted, and hunted by the mention of your name? Is it not enough for you, John Carker, that I am your near relation, and can't detach myself from that apostrophe, say disgrace? James, apostrophe, interposed the other in a low voice, finding that he stammered for a word. You mean it, and have reason, say disgrace. Apostrophe, from that disgrace, apostrophe, assented his brother with keen emphasis, but is the fact, to be blurted out and trumpeted, and proclaimed continually in the presence of the very house. In moments of confidence too? Do you think your name is calculated to harmonize in this place with trust and confidence, John Carker? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, apostrophe, returned the other. No, James. God knows I have no such thought. Apostrophe, what is your thought, then? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said his brother, and why do you thrust yourself in my way? Haven't you injured me enough already? Apostrophe, I have never injured you, James, willfully. Apostrophe, you are my brother, apostrophe, said the manager. That's injury enough. Apostrophe, I wish I could undo it, James. Apostrophe, I wish you could and would. Apostrophe, during this conversation, Walter had looked from one brother to the other, with pain and amazement, He who was the senior in years, and junior in the house, stood, with his eyes cast upon the ground, and his head bowed, humbly listening to the reproaches of the other. Though these were rendered very bitter by the tone, and look with which they were accompanied, and by the presence of Walter whom they, so much surprised and shocked, he entered no other protest against them than by slightly raising his right hand in a deprecatory manner, as if he would have said, "Spare me!" So, had they been blows, and he a brave man, under strong constraint, and weakened by bodily suffering, he might have stood before the executioner. Generous and quick in all his emotions, and regarding himself as the innocent occasion of these taunts, Walter now struck in, with all the earnestness he felt. "Mr. Carker," he said, addressing himself to the manager. Indeed, this is my fault solely. In a kind of heedlessness, for which I cannot blame myself enough, I have no doubt, mentioned Mr. Carker the junior much oftener than was necessary, and have allowed his name sometimes to slip through my lips when it was against your expressed wish. But it has been my own mistake, sir. We have never exchanged one word upon the subject, very few, indeed, on any subject. And it has not been," added Walter, after a moment's pause, "all heedlessness on my part, sir, for I have felt an interest in Mr. Carker ever since I have been here, and have hardly been able to help speaking of him sometimes, when I have thought of him so much." Walter said this from his soul, and with the very breath of honor. For he looked upon the bowed head, and the downcast eyes, and upraised hand, and thought, "I have felt it, and why should I not avow it in behalf of this unfriended, broken man?" Mr. Carker the manager looked at him, as he spoke, and when he had finished speaking, with a smile that seemed to divide his face into two parts. "You are an excitable youth, Gay," he said, "and should endeavor to cool down a little now, for it would be unwise to encourage feverish predispositions. Be as cool as you can, Gay. Be as cool as you can. You might have asked Mr. John Carker himself, if you have not done so, whether he claims to be, or is, an object of such strong interest." "James, do me justice," said his brother. "I have claimed nothing, and I claim nothing. Believe me, on my honor?" said his brother, with another smile, as he warmed himself before the fire. On my fallen life. Returned the other, in the same low voice, but with a deeper stress on his words than he had yet seemed capable of giving them. "Believe me, I have held myself aloof, and kept alone. This has been unsought by me. I have avoided him and everyone." "Indeed, you have avoided me, Mr. Carker," said Walter, with the tears rising to his eyes. So true was his compassion. "I know it, to my disappointment and regret. When I first came here, and ever since, I am sure I have tried to be as much your friend as one of my age could presume to be, but it has been of no use." "And observe," said the manager, taking him up quickly, "it will be of still less use, Gay, if you persist in forcing Mr. John Carker's name on people's attention. That is not the way to befriend Mr. John Carker. Ask him if he thinks it is." "It is no service to me," said the brother. "It only led to such a conversation as the present, which I need not say I could have well spared. No one can be a better friend to me." He spoke here very distinctly, as if he would impress it upon Walter. "Then in forgetting me, and leaving me to go my way, unquestioned and unnoticed. Your memory not being retentive, Gay, of what you are told by others," said Mr. Carker the manager, warming himself with great and increased satisfaction, "I thought it well that you should be told this from the best authority," nodding towards his brother. "You are not likely to forget it now, I hope. That's all, Gay. You can go." Walter passed out at the door, and was about to close it after him, when, hear hearing the voices of the brothers again, and also the mention of his own name, he stood irresolutely, with his hand upon the lock, and the door ajar, uncertain whether to return or go away. In this position he could not help overhearing what followed. "Think of me more leniently, if you can, James," apostrophe said John Carker, "when I tell you I have had, how could I help having, with my history, written here," striking himself upon the breast, "my whole heart awakened by my observation of that boy, Walter Gay. I saw in him, when he first came here, almost my other self." Apostrophe, "your other self." Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated the manager, disdainfully. "Not as I am, but as I was when I first came here too. As sanguine, giddy, youthful, inexperienced, flushed with the same restless and adventurous fancies, and full of the same qualities, fraught with the same capacity of leading on to good or evil." Apostrophe, "I hope not," apostrophe said his brother, with some hidden and sarcastic meaning in his tone. "You strike me sharply, and your hand is steady, and your thrust is very deep," apostrophe returned the other, speaking, or so Walter thought, as if some cruel weapon actually stabbed him as he spoke. "I imagined all this when he was a boy. I believed it. It was a truth to me. I saw him lightly walking on the edge of an unseen gulf where so many others walk with equal gaiety, and from which the old excuse," apostrophe interrupted his brother, as he stirred the fire. "So many. Go on. Say, so many fall. Apostrophe, from which one traveler fell," apostrophe returned the other, "who set forward, on his way, a boy like him, and missed his footing more and more, and slipped a little lower, and went on stumbling still, until he fell headlong, and found himself below a shattered man. Think what I suffered, when I watched that boy. Apostrophe, you have only yourself to thank for it," apostrophe returned the brother. "Only myself," apostrophe he assented with a sigh. "I don't seek to divide the blame or shame." Apostrophe, "you have divided the shame," apostrophe James Carker muttered through his teeth. And, through so many and such close teeth, he could mutter well. "Ah, James," apostrophe returned his brother, speaking for the first time in an accent of reproach, and seeming, by the sound of his voice, to have covered his face with his hands, "I have been, since then, a useful foil to you. You have trodden on me freely in your climbing up. Don't spurn me with your heel." Apostrophe, apostrophe, a silence ensued. After a time, Mr. Carker the manager was heard rustling among his papers, as if he had resolved to bring the interview to a conclusion. At the same time his brother withdrew nearer to the door. "That's all," apostrophe he said. "I watched him with such trembling and such fear, as was some little punishment to me, until he passed the place where I first fell. And then, though I had been his father, I believe I never could have thanked God more devoutly. I didn't dare to warn him, and advise him, but if I had seen direct cause, I would have shown him my example. I was afraid to be seen speaking with him, lest it should be thought I did him harm, and tempted him to evil, and corrupted him. Or lest I really should. There may be such contagion in me, I don't know. Piece out my history, in connection with young Walter Gay, and what he has made me feel, and think of me more leniently, James, if you can." With these words he came out to where Walter was standing. He turned a little paler when he saw him there, and paler yet when Walter caught him by the hand, and said in a whisper, "Mr. Carker, pray let me thank you. Let me say how much I feel for you. How sorry I am to have been the unhappy cause of all this. How I almost look upon you now as my protector and guardian. How very, very much I feel obliged to you and pity you." Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Walter, squeezing both his hands, and hardly knowing, in his agitation, what he did or said. Mr. Morphin's room being close at hand and empty, and the door wide open, they moved thither by one accord, the passage being seldom free from someone passing to or fro. When they were there, and Walter saw in Mr. Carker's face some traces of the emotion within, He almost felt as if he had never seen the face before. It was so greatly changed. Walter, apostrophe he said, laying his hand on his shoulder. I am far removed from you, and may I ever be. Do you know what I am? Apostrophe, what you are. Apostrophe, apostrophe appeared to hang on Walter's lips, as he regarded him attentively. It was begun, apostrophe said Carker, before my 21st birthday led up to, long before, but not begun till near that time. I had robbed them, when I came of age. I robbed them afterwards. Before my 22nd birthday, it was all found out. And then, Walter, from all men's society, I died. Apostrophe, again his last few words hung trembling upon Walter's lips, but he could neither utter them, nor any of his own. The house was very good to me. May heaven reward the old man for his forbearance. This one too, his son, who was then newly in the firm, where I had held great trust. I was called into that room which is now his. I have never entered it since and came out, what you know me. For many years I sat in my present seat, alone as now, but then a known and recognized example to the rest. They were all merciful to me, and I lived. Time has altered that part of my poor expiation. And I think, except the three heads of the house, there is no one here who knows my story rightly. Before the little boy grows up, and has it told to him, my corner may be vacant. I would rather that it might be so. This is the only change to me since that day, when I left all youth, and hope, and good men's company, behind me in that room. God bless you, Walter. Keep you, and all dear to you, in honesty, or strike them dead. Apostrophe, apostrophe, some recollection of his trembling from head to foot, as if with excessive cold, and of his bursting into tears, was all that Walter could add to this, when he tried to recall exactly what had passed between them. When Walter saw him next, he was bending over his desk in his old silent, drooping, humbled way. Then, observing him at his work, and feeling how resolved he evidently was that no further intercourse should arise between them, and thinking again and again on all he had seen and heard that morning in so short a time, in connection with the history of both the Carkers, Walter could hardly believe that he was under orders for the West Indies, and would soon be lost to Uncle Sol. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.